Well, good afternoon, everybody. I'm happy to give you a few academic updates. A couple of new programs that are opening or have opened with success and anticipated success. Our new BS degree in cardiopulmonary science, which builds on the AS in respiratory care, off to a good start. 46 declared majors. It opened this fall, so very excited about that. Diagnostic medical sonography is going in the new building in Deltona. It will open this summer. We had 83 applicants for 20 seats.
Wow.
So we have got a strong starting class. I think that cohort will expand over time, but we're going to start with that number.
Amy, what's the reason for the 20? Is it space, or you just want to start small? Or?
Space, it has a ratio of, with the clinical side, instructors per student, so we're kind of limited there, and the equipment is big. So that's a typical size. We might go to 24. We probably would not go much bigger than that for this kind of program.
Yeah, I think we're designed to go for 24, but we wanted to do it really well the first time, so.
Yeah.
So it is all brand new. We ordered all this equipment.
Yeah,
it's being moved in this week. We have a full-time faculty member, Dr. Carroll. She's done a wonderful job getting it all set up and ordered. So we're excited. Today in the board meeting, actually, we'll bring forward a new concentration in the Bachelor of Science in Engineering Technology in Industrial Engineering, which is suited for advanced manufacturing, and the graduates will be able to go right into those positions. Very excited to launch. We have just gotten the grant and gotten a one-year extension along with the grant because it took them so long to get us the grant itself. It runs out in June. We're like, please extend.
Congratulations.
Good news, bad news.
And they're actually kicking in some additional money for marketing and so forth.
Oh,
so like, they added $20,000 to it. So wonderful, but it's a grow your own apprenticeship program for paraprofessionals in the school system. So if they already work in a classroom, they don't have a bachelor's degree in education or the certifications, they can go to school with us as the technical provider and get some credit for the work that they do in the schools as a paraprofessional. They're paired with a mentor teacher. So we're going to be serving Volusia County, Flagler County, and Brevard because we're one of only, I think it's six schools in the system that got this grant in the state. So we got approached by lots of different folks. Brevard is very excited to work with us. So they will graduate with a bachelor's degree from us and certification. So that starts this fall. Yep. Thinking about when doing discovery on two new bachelor's degrees, radiography, which we build on our AS degree in radiography, and a Bachelor of Science in Digital and Interactive Media. This is an emerging field. Almost all companies have someone who works in this area. If either it's designing their web page or doing their online marketing or some kind of communication that involves visual, audio, high-impact communication. So these folks come out. This is Brad Moody's program. You toured his area at a workshop and got to see all the cool stuff they're doing over there. So we already have the AS degree, and so this would build on with a 120-hour bachelor's degree. So we haven't applied for it yet, but we are getting ready to. This is the program that Tom mentioned having to do with airframe power plant, a new airframe power plant facility at the airport. So what we would propose to do is offer an Associate of Science in Aviation Maintenance Management. That's the official name. It's comprised of two college credit certificates that allow the student to be prepared to sit for the FAA certification in airframe and power plant. My understanding is once they get those, they can get a job in about 2 seconds, and there's a huge demand. So we're very excited to be offering it. We are working with the FAA. There's quite a process there with you every step of the way. We talked to Embry Riddle about this a couple of years ago. They're very, very helpful. So our plan is a partnership with Embry Riddle to allow students to finish RAS degree and articulate into the bachelor's degree and beyond. So a wonderful opportunity for students, and we're very grateful for the help that Embry-Riddle's given us thus far. FSCJ also has this program in Jacksonville. We've worked with them, been up to visit it, look at it. I think between all the support we have, we'll be more than ready. So we're very excited, and we got some of the money to build this facility.
And that's the one that we are looking to lease land at the airport. So it'll, you know, if something in conversation with Embry-Riddle, we thought location would be, it would fit, right, to have it on right by the airport, and some synergy there with other things that the airport's trying to do. And this will help, we hope, will help us attract maintenance companies to come into town. Because I'm talking to the airport, you know, working with them, you know, they're saying that Cyrus says they have to send airports airplanes to other places to go get maintained and fixed.
Yeah, we do too. It's crazy. You can't hire maintainers quick enough. We even have some faculty members that are thinking about going back and turning a wrench because the pay has gotten so high.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
Okay. Probably a lot of grant money available for this too, I'm convinced, for Daytona State. The industry really is dying. Mm-hmm. We're so expensive, I mean, candidly, in the room, that, you know, it's not as good of a sell, but the partnership might be great where they might be, you know, I think there's some opportunities for scholarship dollars for the 2-year degree.
Yeah, I think this, we talked about, you know, one of our legislative asks too, just like we just got funded for all the equipment for law enforcement to buy vehicles and stuff like that. You know, we think we can put together a legislative ask as well to help with equipment and things like that for next, maybe even the next cycle.
Because that's expensive too.
Right? Yeah. So, okay.
Just a couple of other initiatives. We opened the Security Operations Center, or SOC, as we call it, not to be confused with the SCIF. The SOC and the SCIF, I just didn't know I would know about all these things. It opened in November. We are teaching 2 cybersecurity courses that use it, but we also use it for hackathons and other competitive events with students. We launched our very first team in cybersecurity called FalconSec. I'm sure that has a meaning that don't know about, but they came out winning and won the very first competition they were in, beat all other 18 colleges and set a record for the state. So they are, it's only 4 of them. They are so excited, they can't believe it. So it's beautiful. If you're out at the ATC, take a look. It's like a classroom, but the entire front wall like this is screens. So when they sit there and do stuff, it's huge on the screen, or it's in pieces and does all kinds of neat stuff. But very important growing area, and we really want to take advantage of that. The Lemron Center for Excellence, this is an initiative that's a partnership between us and FBH Community and Volusia County Schools. Schools in the area, Palm Terrace and Turity Small, we are taking 3rd through 5th graders after school. And they come over here, and they're tutored by our BSED students. So this young lady is doing a tour of the library, and they got to check out books, and we just embrace them as a member of our community. Our faculty have come over to do special sessions with them on all kinds of things, from the dangers of smoking. They brought their inflatable pig lungs and all Telepa Kids see, and they have loved it. FBH Community's been incredibly generous. For instance, after Speed Week's donated a new bicycle for every kid. So they got out of tutoring that day and walked out, and a truck was unloading bikes and helmets for every kid. And we feed them dinner at the end of this day. So the parents come and pick them up. Lots of very good parent involvement. In fact, some of them have signed up for some of our programs too. So it's just, couldn't be better. I want to point out one wonderful idea. I did not even think of this, but the School of Education did. Our students in the Bachelor of Science in Education have to take a reading practicum class where they must learn to teach students. And normally they go to local elementary schools and practice it. So this time they just walk over to Baker Hall and teach the LCE students, and it's been a win-win for everybody, and just wonderful to see. And we are already seeing improvements in their test scores, which is the goal of this program. And that's all. I'll take any questions for academics.
And if you saw the number, it's grown. It started at 18, I think, the first when it first opened up, 18 or 20?
Yes, it started real small.
And it's 38.
It's at 38. And it's fluctuated a little bit. That's it takes some time to grow the trust with the families to see that this is a good thing to do, that they'll come. I mean, many of them had never been on this campus, and I don't know about, you know, but the school system buses them directly here from the schools, so yeah. It's a true cooperative effort. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Okay, before you start, on those proposed baccalaureate degrees, are you all okay with us moving forward on those?
Yeah.
Again, that's a little bit of process. I did run those by the UCF, because part of it is me communicating with all the presidents, and he's like, yeah, no, that might be a little controversial. I'm like, really? So anyway.
Which one?
I think you read both of them, which I thought was interesting. That was his initial. I'm like, okay, well, where'd you want that building? but anyway.
Here comes the cemetery.
Yeah, so anyway, but you guys, I mean, I think they make sense. It's interesting because radiography, Valencia does the bachelor's of radiography, so I don't know why he's in it. He might just not know.
Okay.
To be honest, but probably his safe answer is to say, oh, yeah. You know, let me mm-hmm. you know, check. And
I mean, clearly they're not producing enough for me to make.
No.
So.
But why would they even say that?
Again, I just don't think he knows. It's just his initial reaction. But I have just, you know, as part of the process, I have to send an email to all the area presidents, let them know what we're doing, and get their support.
It's part of the application process, is to send the actual letters that the other presidents said it was okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Now,
so
they don't really let us start it until you see that sense.
Right. So it's.
And if they say no, it's dead in the water, or just it's noted on the application.
They actually have a period of time that they can submit an alternative,
right,
or something, or lodge their complaints about it. But the impression that I have gotten is, get your ducks in a row first.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then come to us.
I mean, they said, you know. I don't think they can just say no without having saying, well, you know, we're going to expand our program, we'll take care of the need. Like, they have to do something like that. I mean, if they don't, then, I mean, we can, you still go forward, but, you run the risk maybe of not getting approved. But anyhow, but I think they're two good programs. I don't see any overlap whatsoever, because our radiography program, and even like our digital media, it's designed for people who have an AS degree. AS degrees don't generally transfer well into baccalaureate degrees, so it's not like our digital media students are going to UCF. I mean, we need to look at that data, but I wouldn't venture it's a lot, if any, that go there. And then radiography is, you know, you can only get into our program, and plus you can only get into those programs with an AS, that's our admissions requirement. So it's not like we're competing with freshmen. Mm-hmm. You have to have your AS from us. It's a continuation degree more than anything else. So, but you guys are good with us continuing to move mm-hmm. forward? So, okay. All right, Al.
All right, good afternoon. So we are currently working north of 175 major and minor projects. The good news is we're not going to cover all of them. We're just going to hit some highlights. So let's start with the Deltona campus. This is the overhead shot of the new building that you guys will get to see in August when we do the grand opening. You'll see that this is the current Fauthy building, and then this is the new building. We are expecting substantial completion on that building tomorrow. So we'll be able to occupy that building. We're going through a process for the last two or three weeks, and making some good progress. Another thing to point out in our deferred maintenance list is upgrading or improving our parking in all the campuses. And this is just a good example of what that looks like. If you'll note, this is the parking lot that was improved, and believe it or not, this is asphalt. So that's what it looked like before. So it's a significant improvement. We're not repaving, we're sealing, striping, pressure washing, and really just freshening up the look of the campus by doing the parking improvements. A couple of extra photos of that building. This is the view from this is the actual view that I took last week, because you can still see the fence from the public. So this is the back of house. Looks pretty good, even though this is the back of the house, the building. We're actually looking at putting a vinyl marketing across here that says Daytona State. So the marketing department is working with us on developing that, just to give us some, you know, a little marketing exposure. What else here? This is the front. So from the parking lot side, this is the primary entrance. You'll see we did also some marketing here. This is Falcons. This area is actually a classroom. Believe it or not, it's going to be a very nice classroom. Whoever ends up in that is going to be very pleased. The new bookstore for the students is in this area. And then this is a student lounge, which you'll see when you go down. It's a full open space, benches along the wall, and they're putting in the seating now. All of the furniture started moving in this week, so the office spaces, the laboratories are getting furniture this week, and then next week, furniture for the machining operation and sonography move in. Sonography is going to be on the second floor, and as previously mentioned, that program starts in the summer, so we've got to get that one in and rolling quickly.
Tom, who does your bookstores? Internally, or do you outsource it?
Call that phone. For the moment.
Yeah, too easy.
Yeah, for the moment, yeah. It's been interesting. We're actually having some issues with getting them into this. I don't know if you... Has that been resolved, Marty?
Not quite yet. We're still waiting on their... We're up for renewal on their contract. We have one-year options to renew, so we're trying to exercise one of those.
Yeah.
And they'd like us to lock in a multi-year, but the commission structure is totally different now, not to our advantage. And since they've been taken or bought out couple years ago, things have really drastically changed.
Yeah.
They want you to go into the all-inclusive all-in access program, which is digital text exclusively, to ramp up their market share. So a lot of the sister schools are jumping ship. So we're going to try to hang in there maybe one more year, negotiate a deal, and then maybe put it out for bid this next year.
Yeah.
So it may be a delay getting them in here.
We're trying to get them to, trying to get them in here at least for the year.
We still have the full building won't open until the fall anyway, so we still have a few more months to sonography is something.
Negotiating with them because it's, and I can't wait for you all to see it. We're planning the ribbon cutting in for our August board meeting. It is a really nice building. And I think what it's going to do this campus, and you figure we're going to have 100 plus nursing students in there, sonography, as you just saw, and machining, and then the welding's going to happen. There's going to be some nice light on that campus. So that, it's going to be, the idea is that they have this at the Palm Coast campus where they serve fresh coffee and out of the bookstore, grab and go sandwiches and muffins and things like that. And it does quite well. We want to be able to offer it. And this campus is probably slightly bigger for sure once the those programs move in. So.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a really nice, really, really good, they did a really good job with the design of the building. It looks really, really nice. I mean, the facilities are top, nursing, they're going to have the just top-notch facility there.
All right. As Dr. Basso said, as soon as nursing moves out of Faulty Hall, which is next door in Building 1, then we've already started plans to develop the welding lab in that space. So this is just a concept. Drawing of what that will look like with welding booths on both ends, and then we're also adding a classroom. The land firing range, we saw something on that earlier, the conceptual layout of the building, and this is where the firing range now lands in the campus master plan. This is the current academic building, and so it's just along this side. So the front of campus is up in this area, and then you come in, and the firing range will now lie with this building, which is also on the renovation list that we have funds for this year.
So. Right, so the renovation that we got 50% funding will go into that building, and then the other, I'm going to point to the other building it will go into. It's that.
Can't get to go up.
Right there.
Yeah, right there.
Is where we, you know, the $6 million we're looking to is to go into those buildings and convert. You got to make it, you know, a tactical room, you know, the hand-to-hand combat room, where we call it the tactical, defensive tactics and something. So anyway, part of the full picture.
GMP, we just received on that, and you'll see that this afternoon, in this afternoon's meeting. So, and then as we move through, I'll show you some other slides. Phase two of the project, that building, oops, where's my marker? It's going to lie in this area, so it'll lie in the same programmatic area, and we'll see how it flows out into the defensive driving range on the south of campus. So let's move and look at that. This is the floor plan, just real quick, what the driving or firing range looks like. Academic building, gun storage, and then this is the range proper. This is phase two, so this is the tactical pavilion. Both of these buildings, there's a PT course for physical education, and then a defensive driving course as well. And as we spoke, this is the original campus master plan drawing. What the plan showed was a roadway that ran through this wetlands area. We found that to be a little problematic. We're going to have a lot of pushback from St. John's on that, and it was going to be very costly. So we actually went to the county and asked for an easement off of this county road, 4139. And it looks like we're going to get that. So instead of constructing a full road across the wetlands area, we'll just have a small easement that comes right into the driving range, driving course. So this shows all three buildings. This is the building that will be renovated. This is the tactical pavilion. And then this is the firing range. And then from that, there's a walking path that leads out to the physical fitness track. And then this is the defensive driving range. And it too has a few buildings for storage of the new vehicles and things like that that we're getting with the state funding.
So you go off, to get to that easement, you go off the campus,
right? You do.
Down the county road.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good thing about that, there's only gonna be 15 or 16 people there at one time. Because they can only accommodate so many people driving.
Yeah.
And so it's only part of the course that they go through, and so they're not there every day. It's just part of the course. So they'll work in the classroom and in the firing range, and in part of that class, they'll come down and do their driving, maybe once a week or so.
Now, I'm just pointing out, is that the buildings that they're going to put up there, they're close to the road?
They are. There's quite a few trees in this area. They won't be that close to the road. They're not as close as
they are. I say, if it's something we can see, maybe we move them to the other side of the, But anyway,
yeah,
need consideration on what it looks like from the road.
Right. Yeah. This is a very heavily wooded area, very heavily wooded. So the course, too, is somewhat overbuilt, so we'll look at that if we run into issues. We're actually running really close to the interstate, which runs this side, and then the county road, and then it actually intersects down at this point. So additionally, there's a lot of land development that's going on along this side of the road as well, off campus. So,
residential or commercial?
Residential.
Yep.
Is that driving noisy, or is it like, are we gonna have all kinds of complaints? Or?
No, we shouldn't, it should be. They're not doing, they're realistic, they're doing obstacles and the most aggressive, they might be pit maneuvers and things like that, but they're not squealing tires and, things of that nature, so.
The board members might be.
Okay. We've had people ask to use it, so.
Yeah.
Guy from the county, when we went to them, wanted to use it. The amphitheater came up earlier, so this is a renovation of the current amphitheater in Flathead and Palm Coast. It's primarily to expand the roof, Gary.
Yeah. Gary roof.
So it's going to expand in both directions. We're going to add additional covering and seating to the back, but it's also going to expand over the stage for the comfort of the performers. So this was an initial conceptual drawing. I mean, this is similar to what it will look like, and so this is the amount of addition that's coming to the front, and then across the back there will be a small addition that covers the back of the stage. What we've decided to go with, and you may not have seen this yet, is staying with the wood concept. The architect gave us some options for some fabric, white fabric looks and things like that. We didn't think it fit into the woodsy, outdoor, you know, that kind of feel that you get when you're there. And so we've decided so far, unless we get redirected, to maintain the wood look. And so this is the new section that is added here. Just showing
to point out too, I think we're going to be adding a restroom in the back.
Right? Yes, we're going to try to add some facilities. That's not in either one of these drawings. Maybe here. Right now there's several portable buildings along this area. We're working with the director and the nursing department to see how many of these they have to have. We want to create a path for musicians or people in working in the stage to be able to unload. So right now they're driving in the grass and they kind of have to go off road to get their equipment back there. So this is a creation of that service drive to the back of stage. And then we want to look to add restrooms for the performers, which is what we understand is a big draw. If they have changing facilities, a chance to take a shower, if they're doing multiple shows, they'll change clothes, things of that nature. So that's part of this as well. And then we have an additional funded opportunity from the state to upgrade this road that connects the main campus. So right now it's a one-way, very rough road that runs through here. What we're looking to do is improve it to a two-lane road, and then we want to run the pedestrian walkway in conjunction with it. The hope is, this thing gets full enough from our events that people actually have to start parking back here. And then the patrons will then walk the sidewalk through the trail, which is very wooded, and then they'll come up and it'll be a grand opening into the amphitheater. So that's kind of what it looks like right now. We're still working through some concepts and plans on that.
We had, at the initial planning session, we had Dave Pellicer, who has been very involved in St. Augustine Amphitheater. And its transformation into one of the best venues now for medium-sized venues for amphitheaters and all that, and attractions. And one of the comments he had made to David Ayers from Flywheel Broadcasting was that there's this gap between your 2,500 and 5,000 seat arenas that sometimes it's nice to have a 1,000 seat facility that can accommodate, you know, some good acts that could come to town, and we may be able to catch them, you know, that way coming through there. So the multitude of different shows that we might be able to get into that amphitheater now should be able to expand. And also that path that Alan was just talking about, it's real important for loading and unloading. Right now it's very difficult to, you know, even get a temporary like a Lovely Lou facility back there. It's really challenging. We've got a couple of buildings there. I don't know if they can be torn down or not, but they're old and pretty run down and not huge.
So. They're portables, so they're not, you know, they're not made to be permanent structures. So we're looking into that. So, and that would clean up the area a little bit too. So, you know, improve the aesthetics in the area. Multi-purpose field is a new project that we've been working on. It's in conjunction with the flag football program that started, but also will support other athletic programs and practice fields, as well as student activities. This is just across the street, actually. This is white, along white, and then the cemetery is just over on this side. This is the first concept that we had. Does not include anything in the cemetery. So before we get started that's down that path.
Yeah. That's a rest area.
Could be a rest area. Since this concept has come out, we actually acquired the Red Cross building and that property. So now we've gone back to the architect and asked them to include this area as well. We had some planning meetings with the community that Dr. Labasso led 6 or 7 weeks ago, something like that. Got feedback from the community members, just, you know, trying to be a good neighbor, stay in touch with the folks around us. Concerns about water, stormwater off the property. There was some concerns from the people about us turning in off of these smaller roads into the parking lot. So this will give us an opportunity to not have turn-ins on their primary road and then switch this parking lot, which is just along the residential area, over to the other side and possibly keep this parking and just improve it. So it'll reduce the cost of the project as well. So it kind of looks like this then. We keep the parking. The parking was along this area. Currently this would stay green space. There's a lot of oak trees and pines and that sort of thing over there, so we'll maintain that barrier between the area and the local housing. And then we're going to keep this little storage building and also add a restroom facility for the athletes or students that are over there, so they don't have to keep coming across the road.
Yeah, so yeah, that was their, you know, some of the feedback, so I think we'll be able to address it now that we've got Red Cross and not. But I do have, the board gave us guidance a few years back to stop buying houses on the east side of Seneca, just that we felt it was too far. But I do wonder, you know, thinking about it a little bit more, if it makes sense to take some of those down, because just as we develop there, it gives a buffer between us and the neighbors.
So Seneca's the one right there?
Show them where Seneca is. Right there. Yeah. And we had bought some. We do own some on the east side. So if you see there,
so coming down here,
yeah. And we own some, and we stopped buying. But you know, the fact that anytime we start doing things there, we're going to have a little bit of, you know, of this with the neighbors there, and
this residence right here, I'm not sure is even occupied. The roof on this one is actually collapsing. You can see it's falling in, so. Some areas of disrepair around that area.
Can you have someone reach out to find out what's going on with that property?
Sure, absolutely.
We can take that one.
I think that's a
because that's on the right side.
Yeah. That's definitely in our buy zone.
You should definitely continue to subtly and steadily.
Yeah.
Look at those. If it makes sense, buy every one you can.
Yep. Yeah.
Because you're going to control your own destiny.
Yeah.
And that's, you know. That was a big thing downtown for Brown & Brown when, you know, you're putting up that kind of structure and it's, you know, you have some old neighborhoods around there. And it was like, buy up everything you can because you alleviate a lot of the
A lot of the universities at UF and FSU are kind of landlocked now, you know, because the property that's around them is going up as a high-rise residential. And so they're having to move off campus with some of their buildings to accommodate, you know, some of their student housing.
So it's
a challenge.
Are you okay if we do get some of those that come up on the east side of Seneca to at least entertain them and, you know, and
so the one just directly in that one block area?
Yeah, so like this area right here, like see like that house came for sale or that one, because this could be something, you know, depending over time, you know. Let's say we want to start a tennis team one day, you know, and I would flip it. I would put as much on White Street as you can because there's nothing to deal with there. But if I put tennis courts here, I have to move parking here, and then you're going to get them saying, "Well, parking lot right across the street from my house." And
yeah, that makes sense.
So, you know, I
just in that zone, not.
Yeah. I think for now I would prioritize that. I mean, we have. There's chunks of land that we do own on this side.
Yes.
There'd be a day where we would be
file, but that the Codbury would want to put something there, and then you can maybe entertain
parking lot
that east side of mm-hmm. Seneca. But yeah, we'll bring them to you as long as you're open to, you know, we'll, we can situationally look at them and see what makes sense there. But
this side of the property is already still the blind, so that, you know, there's no housing up in this area, so it's really yeah. along Seneca, and then down White Street. We have a lot of property down the edge of White Street.
Yeah. Okay.
That we maintain. We try to keep it mowed and picked up, but it's a bit of a challenge. It's still in not developed condition, let's call it. Just a few of the minor, smaller projects that we've gotten state funding for. This is at the ATC. This is an obsolete paint booth that we can no longer get parts for. The program is outgrown what's there now, so we've got funding to replace this paint booth, and then as well grow their welding program. They have an independent welding program that they use with the automotive, so they're looking to double the size. So they have 5 booths now. We'll grow that to 10. Some other deferred maintenance that you may have seen around campus. This is Building 100, the Orthol Building. We just finished the roof on that building. Schindler Science is next on the list. We're actually trying to save some money by doing some fluid applied roofing, which is a concept that's come up over the past few years. It's actually 30% to 40% cheaper than a full roof tear off and a replacement.
Yeah, they were explaining this to me, and it seems like a no-brainer. I mean, yeah. you put this liquid on it, and it lasts.
You get a 20-year warranty.
You get a 20-year warranty on it, and it's 30% cheaper than.
Yeah.
Because I know when we replace roofs, and usually in 5 years, I'm going to get a leak somewhere.
Right.
So does the liquid like harden, or does it treat?
It does harden, but it doesn't get hard. It's still applicable like a rubber substance.
Okay.
But what it does is you don't have seams in the roof anymore.
Yeah,
so
one barrier.
This is a brand new roof right here. And you can still see where the the seams are in the roof.
They roll that stuff down in sections, and you're going to have
they seal them.
Yeah.
Well, those seams start popping up or coming loose. This fluid applied seals all that. You create a bathtub, basically. And so it completely, so you have no seams, you have no leaks. If you ever get a leak, it's usually around penetrations, and they'll come back and fix that. But you get a 20-year warranty. At 20 years, if they reapply, you get another 20-year warranty. So it's a good cost savings. We've actually saved enough on one of our projects that we're doing on the roof on, that we can address the windows. So we had $800,000 budgeted for the roof, a tear off and a replacement. The cost came in at $500,000. We're going to use the other $300,000 to go and seal all the windows in the building, so it kind of airtight the whole building.
$800,000 to $500,000 replacement is big money.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you think of like the hospital and some of those flat roofs. It's funny because I always thought to myself, there's got to be a better way to do these roofs. There's got to be a better way to, one of those things like Shark Tank, I should have put that forward.
It has to be a good candidate. If it has too much moisture, you can't seal the moisture in. So they have to come in and infrared scan the roof and check for moisture levels. And if something pops hot, they'll go up and do cores and make sure that there's not a lot of moisture in the insulation. If the insulation is wet and saturated, it's got to come off. Can't insulate it, but you can't seal it that way. Continuing on, this is another example. The field house, which you're probably familiar with, this is where baseball, softball is, and the dugouts have metal roofs, and they have a similar process for this. So instead of taking these off, you can see there's some wear. We're going to put a fluid applied color coating over the metal, and you get the same type of seal. And the reason that we're doing that, as you can see, this is what the roof looks like up close. We've got some leaks in this building. Again, the metal overlaps. You have fasteners that go onto it. So you actually seal on top of those fasteners, prevents the moisture and rain from going into the building.
Waiting for a long time for someone to invent that.
Yeah.
And then we're going to address the batting cage. The batting cages as well. Around the batting cages, there's some rust on these openings, so we're going to do both of them at the same time. Just a list, I'm not going to go through all these, and some other deferred maintenance we're working on. 2 chiller projects, air handlers, lift station, backflows, parking lots, roofs. A few things that we completed, the Griffin Green center air handler replacement and the land parking lot LED that was recently done. And so this is part of the deferred maintenance funding that we got through the state, part of that 175 projects that we're working on.
When you say replace the transformers at EL,
yes.
Talking about the boxes themselves?
Yes.
Okay.
So what the plan is to get them, we have a lot of buildings with transformers inside the building.
Yeah.
And we own them.
Oh, we own them.
We own those. And so if that transformer goes out and the building goes out, the onus is on us to find a transformer and get it put in.
Okay.
FPL will take over the ownership and maintenance of that transformer if we work with them to move it outside and put it on a pad and buy the transformer. So we've got money to buy the transformer. And then they'll make the primary connection to the transformer. And then we're responsible for connecting the building.
Okay.
And then at that point, from that transformer to the line, they own it. So if something happens to the transformer, we call them, they come out and fix it. Uh, 140 and 150. So Dr. Lamasso mentioned these earlier. These are the shared joint ownership or joint sites with UCF. UCF is actually putting in to be both of these buildings $9 million. So they got funding to upgrade our buildings. And we did not say no, let's just say. So they started with 140. They're replacing all the windows. They did some roof repairs on this one. And then they asked to do some renovations on the inside in their area, the 20% that they have.
Yeah.
And we said, all right, go ahead, we'll let you this time. 150, they're completely replacing the roof. They're replacing the windows and the storefronts and the metal facade, which I'll show you in the next slide. And we also did some sweet talking and got them to replace all the landscaping around both buildings and fixing the fountain that's out in front of 150. So
yes.
That area will look completely different by the time school starts in August, let's say.
Yeah, when you park today for the board meeting, you'll be able to see that some of the work that they've done. So it's, looks nice.
So here's what it looks like now. This is more architecture that you normally see with a Gothic building, white. And they put the copper on and it patinas and it looks really nice and fancy. It doesn't look that great with a red brick building. And so they're taking that off and putting on this powder coated metal. So this is what the new building will look like, the building will look like after this comes off and they finish with it.
Nice.
So just in replacing these panels, before we even start on the windows, the building looks a lot better.
We have to make sure that folks that want to build a building on ISB doesn't know about this.
Yeah.
Any questions? All right, thank you very much. Whoops.
Good afternoon, Board of Trustees. I'll be providing today some residence hall updates. The residence hall continues to be highly successful. The majority of our students are from Florida, mostly Volusia and Flagler counties, but as you can see, they are from all over the nation. We do have many international students, and they're not just athletes. Some of them come here because of our programs. We have one student from the Netherlands, and he came here specifically for our broadcasting and TV production program. He's going to be graduating this summer. Our residents do exceptionally well. They have access to all of the academic support, all of the retention support, and all the activities and amenities on campus. So they are really having an overall better college experience. Our applications continue to be demonstrating quite a bit of a high demand. If you look at our year-to-date data, you'll see for fall 24, spring 25, we have already surpassed our fall 22, spring 23 data. We have not yet beat our fall 23, spring 24 data, but we're getting applications every day and those numbers are growing. If you look at the application summary, you will see that year over year, we are continuing to have more than 1,000 applications for only 256 beds. So the enthusiasm is still there. Our spring only applications are very beneficial and those numbers are also robust. And this is because sometimes in December we have graduates. They graduate in December, or we have athletes that transfer out, and so we're able to use the spring-only applications to refill those spots. That ensures that we are always at full capacity in the residence hall. Now, I will tell you, our residents are having such a great time, they come back year after year, and that does not leave many spots for our freshmen. For the upcoming academic year, we only have 28 spots to offer our freshman class.
So if they're in, they get automatic rate of...
They get first dibs, they get notified first, they have a time period, and then if they don't return, then we offer to anybody else. So we continue to remain at full capacity year over year. We're well on our way for that for the upcoming year with 571 applications and counting. And we are working on a very great summer occupancy plan. We have interns from NASCAR and Brown & Brown. We have athletic summer camps, Trio Talent Search, Trio Upward Bound, and the music camp. Now looking at just the summer camps and interns alone, we're expecting approximately 283 people in our residence hall, just that. Not including our students taking classes coming for summer and our athletes that come early for fall sports or come early to take classes. So we're expecting quite a bit of people to come through over the summer.
What did we do to the rates between years, residence hall rates? Did we increase them by?
We did the double occupancy, I think we did like 5% the first year, because we were low, so we went a little higher, and then we had 3.7% this coming year. And then even higher on the singles. We cranked those up quite a bit because there wasn't enough of a difference between the two. So I think need those percentages, but we did, yeah. And the other thing we did too is, does it say 256 students? If you remember, it was actually, we opened with 252.
Yeah.
And I felt so bad last year that we had so little spots to offer freshmen, we converted a single suite into a double to give a couple, four extra beds.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, yeah.
Yeah. And the only reason I ask, I know affordability is so important to us, but also that second residence hall is going to be harder to pencil out just because of the construction interest rates.
Yeah. And
mm-hmm. we may have to think about, is it a blend of the two?
Yeah,
and
right.
if there weren't enough applicants, you'd be really reluctant, but obviously
right.
there's demand is high.
Yeah,
demand is high.
That's an
and it's something
right?
I think, if we were to, we talk to the banks, someone like Gary Levine, it would be, will they allow us to blend, right? Isn't that a question at hand? Yeah, I'm not sure why they would care as long as they're getting we're performing. But
I mean, the first
it's about
the first loan might not, but
yeah, I mean, it comes down to really what is debt service coverage. I mean, that's what it comes down to. But you just gotta with the increase in the cost. And, that's where raising the funds. We can reduce the amount we have tomorrow
right.
through raising more money through the foundation. So, but it doesn't look like the long-term rates for the next 2 to 3 years are going to really come down. Actually, they've gone up here recently because of the inflationary reports. But even if they settle back down, you're still going to be.
That's why I mean, the concern is going to be here for a while.
Yeah. CPI yesterday didn't do us any favors.
Yeah,
not looking like
now your tenured treasury is around 4.5 now. Again, so
I wonder. Someone asked me the other day if we would bond, and we didn't do bonding the first time because traditional lending was so favorable. Does bonding come into the equation now? Is that a possible better option?
It can. My teammate that I have introduced you to, David Adams, can probably speak to that better. Sometimes to one set size reaches up kind of which you possibly could be. Your closing costs are typically higher, but your interest rate can be a decent amount lower.
Yeah.
And the housing authority, they can issue bonds directly. They don't do it through a conduit.
I don't know for sure on that. Could be right though.
I never know. Yeah.
Yeah. What I do think though is that exploring other ways of approaching this can possibly be good. The other thing too that David had mentioned, he said there's some places where they've actually built facilities to help attract workforce at the same time. Not that they occupy the same buildings, but you know, had take those buildings where for some of the workforce they could achieve housing here as well.
Mm-hmm. You see that a lot of high cost cities these days, like if you have college in California or New York.
So that, but the success of what we have so far has just been incredible. And just, I mean, the demand is there for the next phase. It's just more a matter of cost.
Yeah, I'm going to cover some. Is that your last slide?
Yes. Okay, yeah. So we'd really like to thank the board for their support of our residence home. It really has made a difference in the lives of our students. They have a much more enriching college experience, and it's very affordable. At this time, I'll turn it over to Dr. Lovasso. He will talk some more about Res Hall Phase 2.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Yeah. So, so I think this, part of this is going to be obviously fundraising, and then maybe other ways we can think of financing, and on the fundraising, who we can approach and partner with and whatnot. So, obviously we have the foundation arm of the college helping, and Randy Dye serves as the board designate on the foundation, and he's been really great. You know, he's the one that helped set the meeting with the Romans, and we're tweaking the presentation. You're going to see some samples of what we have to show, there's a couple ways of approaching it. There's to do the full amount for the full naming right. That's a large number, and there's only probably a few people that can do that. Then the other idea is to break it up and look at selling, maybe floors or something like that. As Sharice mentioned, demand, we did the survey, as we talked about, and high demand. The architect should be delivering any day now, final renderings. This is the actual building. This is the actual rendering on what it would look like. So, it would be amazing. It would be really, really nice. Floor plans, you've seen those. We kind of got your input on that. And it's designed as the next step type of option for the residence hall. Again, this is the first floor. Great space here. I think the chamber did a great job of getting money to name some things in that way. So it could lend itself to that as well. I know the foundation board's certainly going to help, but any help we can get from this board with those types of ideas or contacts. That's the room way out. Everyone gets their own room. There's no sharing, and this one provides a little sitting room, a little dining room, table, refrigerator, countertop, sink, and a microwave, so that they would not require the same minimum meal plan as the Res Hall 1 students. They still would have a meal plan, but it would be, I think the minimum is 14 meals a week, and maybe if you lived in here, we'd offer a block plan that would maybe average to seven, so we make it cheaper on that end too. When you look at the total package, as far as meal plans, this is the actual what it would look like, and that would be the courtyard. And we're talking possible volleyball courts on the outside, which we think would be a nice feature. Again, it's all about location. We got the perfect spot for it. Gives access to all the departments and support services. And again, affordability is obviously an important part of what we do. And then it attracts talent to the area, as you saw by where we're grabbing people. And
trying to help our local businesses, you know, when we get a student who comes out of, you know, Orange County to be a nurse and lives here, good chance they might just stay here and get, and you know, if they get a scholarship to stay here and work. So it's a talent, it helps us attract talent to our community. So strategically, big picture, from our businesses, this is a good thing for them too. You know, and it's partly how we are trying to portray the conversation when we talk to people about that.
I'm Yasmina, and I'm from Sanford, Florida.
We use this in our pitch.
So I'm majoring in culinary management right now. I've been doing it for about a year or so. It's changed everything about what I wanted to do, and just been so grateful for the opportunity. So I'm very into just leadership and definitely helping others. I've done it all my life. So whatever comes my way and everything that I've been taught, I just know that through the training that I'm able to accomplish anything that I want. What attracted me to Indigenous State College was definitely how they ran their facility and how they treated students with so much love and so much support. And so once I moved into the dorms, I knew exactly where I needed to be and that it was easier than commuting, because if I had to commute, I wouldn't be able to do this program. It would be impossible. And just by how high demand and how focused and driven the classes are, you need to be here. Another great thing about being here in student life is the fact that I don't even have a vehicle. I don't own a vehicle. It just hasn't worked out. And so the greatest thing about that is I can still live my independence and I can still do what I love to do here at Daytona State and not have to rely on anybody. And I know by the end of the day saying I can do this.
She hits on some, you know, really key point. I mean, so here's a student from Sanford who probably couldn't do the program. It's too far of a commute. So maybe she lands in a school in Seminole County and gets a job at Disney versus comes here, gets trained, and maybe works at the Hilton down the road and stays a Volusia County resident. So we have, you know, those kind of testimonials. The timeline, again, final drawing should be here in a week. And then everything else after that is to be determined. You know, we recently I started thinking and talking to Marty, and, you know, I was thinking we kind of always had to break ground on this thing, like in March or April, to open in the summer. And thinking about it, it's probably not that hard and fast, because if you saw the number of applications we get for spring only, and at least if financially we structured it like the last one, the first, what is it, year of operation, we only plan to do an interest-only payment. So I just thought to myself, you know, if I went outside and tripped and fell on $12.4 million, I could do it today, and maybe the dorm doesn't open until October, but we fill it in January. Not normal what you do with this project, but I think because if you're only paying interest only, you probably could swing it. And I think with the demand we even have for spring, we'd have a good shot at maybe, I don't know if we'd fill 100%, but we would fill it. You know, we'd have a good chance of filling a good number of beds there.
Especially with a commuter campus, you'd have students that might move in the middle of the semester.
True, right.
Whereas, you know, if it was typically 80% out of state,
there's
no way.
Right,
yeah.
So I think you're right. You have a lot more flexibility to do it at different times. Yeah.
I mean, ideally, I think it's still ideal. It's a slam dunk if you do it like we did the first one, and you open up in August, your first class, and you fill it up. But anyhow.
The other thing too, Tom, you could spell it out in your RFP. What are the preferred terms? You know, so depending on the timing, when you're ready to pull that trigger,
you
can kind of try to craft it that way. Given the quality of our credit, I think, you know, you're going to still have banks that are going to have interest in it.
So we have some great renderings, as you can see. This is what we'll be showing, you know, people. Dr. Randy Howard Residence Hall.
There we go.
I like it.
Sorry, I didn't leave anyone out.
Oh, dear.
We have Kelly Tri-Tech Residence Hall here.
So all I get is a theater, huh?
That's the, so this is the, this again, this is the actual building. So this is the, this would be the entrance from the north, and the other one is the entrance from the south.
Maybe you can sell it to multiple people then. As long as they don't walk on the other side.
Hey Bob, you get the lounge. Yeah.
As long as it's got a bar in it.
Yeah.
We need Bob the lounge, a nice student lounge area. We get Gary to buy the main lounge because he's going to be the banker on it, right?
Retired.
We gave Randy Dye the study room because we think he's the most studious trustee.
That's great.
And then since Lloyd's retired out of the group, we gave him the game room.
All right.
So, but these are actual renderings and things that we could show as, potential naming rights. So this is an interior shot of what that lounge area would look like. Again, the goal, is 15 million. And, $15 million is, where it is today, and obviously that number could change as unfortunately nothing else is staying the same. And again, we spec'd out the two buildings for, talking to, our group and our facility committee and Dr. Howard. We did a 5-floor and a 4-story. The 4-story, it was a neat exercise because, we originally thought we would gain some efficiencies in just going 1-4 and that we would get a big difference in square footage price. Well, that wasn't the case. It was like $5 a square foot difference. So at $15 million, that puts, at the current estimates of what it would cost us, that puts the room and board fee at the really, the almost, the, I think, the top of the tolerance for students. Concerns me a little bit because, the performer, you're supposed to increase it every year, and when do you hit that point of you're too high? So the other one, the 4-story, brings it down to the lower part. I want to say, it was like $8,100 an academic year for the 4-story, and like over $9,000 for the 5-story. It's like a $1,000 difference as we refine the numbers. But obviously, you kind of want to maximize the demands there, but it's got to fit the.
Yeah, which is still so unintuitive. I mean, I don't understand that at all. Every project you ever do scale is.
Yeah, and you called, he's like, because we're both baffled. He's like, let me call the contractor. So called the contractor.
I did ask that Heath if you could bid it as an option. I mean, because then let's let the builders talk with their. So you'd have to spend a little extra because you give them two sets of prints, if you will. Although the first, three stories are the same in both versions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it just I don't
so we do. We have full drawings, set of drawings for 4 and 5, and you put it out to bid. You put it out and maybe they're when it comes down to it, there's more efficiencies than they're willing to show up front. But so that's kind of where we are. And then they're working on updating. The slides to show the different versions of whether it's a naming right pitch for the entire building, or are we talking to someone else, an organization saying, hey, we'd like to name this floor for $2.5 million. If we did each floor for $2.5 million, we'd have it done. So, we found 5 either individuals and or organizations that want to do a floor. It's kind of one of those things, if you name a floor, then I don't know that you get to name the lounges in those floors. Mm-hmm. That kind of feels kind of funny in a way. But those are the things we're wrestling with. All right. Any other thoughts on that before we call on Kristen Hansen? Come on down. An update on foundation. And Kristen is now serving as the interim director of the executive director of the foundation. I don't think I told you on the phone when we talked the other day, but Tim did resign.
I heard.
Okay, yeah. I think I might have mentioned everybody else, but ours was a little quicker. We had another another meeting right after.
Yeah.
All right.
I might stand over here so I'm not towering over all of you. So I think I know most of you, or I've seen you most places, but as Tim said, I've been in the foundation. I started actually the day that COVID that shut down the college. So that was my introduction to the college, but I've been here working with Tim hand in hand, so I'm very comfortable about taking over. So basically, we just kind of wanted to give you guys just a recap of our work that we've been doing in the foundation this year. We raised $4.1 million. The foundation also awarded $1.4 million in scholarships and program support to students in college programs in 2023. So this is great because we have really been focusing on getting those scholarships awarded. I know in the past, maybe we didn't get as many out as we needed to, but we're trying to get out in the community, just meet everyone and build as many relationships to get those scholarships out. Most of you, I think, attend the Gala or the Cork and Fork. There are two kind of main fundraisers. Cork and Fork was my first one last year. We're about to have that again in a couple of weeks, but we raised over a couple hundred thousand dollars for both of those combined. Mostly the Gala was about $165,000.
Do you have the date on the Cork and Fork?
Yes.
May 5th.
So if you guys are interested, it's a great
Sunday.
Event. We have how many restaurants?
Last year we had 10 restaurants. Well, and what we try to do with the Cork and Fork is focus all on our alumni, our chefs that are alumni, our owners that are alumni. We have stations set out, some nice wine flowing, music, 4 to 7. It's a great event.
Yes.
I know I've seen a few of you there.
Yeah, so there'll be like 10 or so restaurants, and they donate food, and so all the proceeds go to the college. And our beverage science lab is also, I think, having their brews there, I think.
The brews are there, yeah. And we have like Norwood's 31 Supper Club, Roseville. I know, that's why I looked at you.
Yeah. Everyone except for Gary, if you can make it, because Gary will be tied up there.
I know.
But
you try to get the change.
Yeah.
I know. And it's unusual because I think I have to shut ticket sales off, though, that we're that full now.
I won.
So that's a good problem to have, but it's a great event. So basically, just to go over just a few of our big gifts that we have this year. I mean, we've set up several new scholarships. I just set one up last night, actually, with a gentleman who his wife passed. She was an adjunct here and went to dental hygiene school in her 40s. So it's sad but great in her memory. But 1.9 from Halifax and Advent Health. You guys, I'm sure, have heard about that a while ago. $500,000 from DS and Angela Patel for engineering and technology. I actually met DS when he was part of the Rotary, the Port Orange Rotary. That's how we kind of got the relationship started. And this was great to see that he did this. And we had another $500,000 from the Hussini family. This one for culinary, some programs. Costa, I think, caught him in Cafe 101, and he needed some help with some programs. But we had quite a few, Bob Allen and our normal Happy Dad. We had quite a few nice donations this year. So just to kind of break it down a little for you, we've been focusing on really trying to get this alumni giving. We have Hannah in our office, she's great. She's came from student life. She graduated from Stetson, went to Daytona State first. We're trying to really just build our Alumni and Friends Association back up. It kind of, during COVID, we lost some groundwork, and we're really doing a great job. These numbers are actually all up. Last year we had, we're up 43 donors and 49,000 in our alumni giving. And individuals, we are up almost double in our individual giving, which is great, and up 242,000 from last year. And obviously our endowments, a big part of it is the Advent and Halifax, but we are still up in the donors, which is, That's been our focus. My focus especially is getting out into the community and just getting new people engaged in Daytona State. So many new people that I even knew from my previous job that didn't even really understand what we had going on at Daytona State. So we've been having a lot of individual giving and donations, but doing some other events to just try to get us out there engaged with the community and donors. I have $15 million to raise. Any questions about that? You guys good? Okay. So again, here's our alumni. So we had a great alumni, we had a great homecoming this year. We finally were full-fledged past all the COVID stuff, but we had our golf program celebrated their 25th year and had almost all of their alumni from each class come back during homecoming. So it was wonderful. We did a celebration for them out on the soccer field during the soccer match. We had an alumni and friends social hour at homecoming, that was great. And then of course, Coach Brown has wanted a van for a long time and we got the van finally. But it was really awesome to see these girls that came back from the very first year in the program. Men's, women, and soccer did their first alumni match, it was last April. We're about to have another one April 26th. So it was men's and women's together. They had a match, and then we did a nice reception for them in the Husseini. Dr. Lavasso came over. A lot of them came back from obviously different programs. We had a dental hygiene reunion. We're working on a Quanta Honors reunion. We're just trying to get all of the alumni, obviously all of them together, but it's easier. They stick with their group, so we're working on some nursing and some police officers, educators, and just trying to get them to give. You know, we're doing a lot more of the asking of alumni, mailers, or just when they were at this event, I had a little card made that, you know, QR code, and we got some donations from there. So just trying to work it on all angles with them.
For the board members that are new, I mean, Gary, you might remember, and Lloyd, you know, we really didn't, when I first became president, we had really no alumni office or whatnot. So we did the position and started doing so. That's why it's on my dashboard, if you remember. And if you see from what we did from inception to where we did today, it's coming along. You know, lots to do yet, but I'm pleased with where we're going. And obviously, Kristen did a lot of that on the alumni side in her earlier years, and Hannah now doing it. So. It's good to see. It's planting seeds for fruit, you know, that, you know, we may not see in our time here, but hopefully the college will see down the road.
So we just participated in the One Daytona Art Festival just this weekend. It was wonderful. It's our first time. We were approached and asked to be one of the beneficiaries, which was amazing, with Volusia County Schools. The best part about this weekend was we showcased so many college programs. So we had cosmetology in the kids zone. We had all of our art featured with Volusia County Art in one of the areas. Our pottery along with that, our educators and our some of our science. They did science projects for kids. We had our athletes at stations doing different things. Trent, as you'll see up here, is doing a pottery demonstration on stage. Obviously, that's us getting our check on the last day, but we were so represented at this. We had our jazz ensemble sing in the morning. Costa did a cooking demonstration. It was great. So not only did we get money from this, the bigger part of it is we have a nice relationship now in the future with One Daytona, which just makes sense. And hopefully, you know, we get some more money from that. But we planted the seed, raise some money, and then everyone got to see the different projects we had. The most exciting part about it, I think for me, was we did a digital media contest. We had the top three, Brad Mooney sent over. Daytona won pick two, and the two winners, I don't know if we have them on, maybe they were on the back one. Yeah, there they are. So the two winners are displayed now at the big advertisement signs that are over at One Daytona, the big concrete ones. They're displayed there now for a full year. So it's pretty exciting. I mean, it's just for them, it's great, but it's just a great showcase for our college and our program. Taste of Jeep Beach, this is coming up again in another week. We started this last year, our very first one. We raised some great money with this. It's similar to Cork, but it's during the day in different restaurants, not as more casual restaurants. This is us with a check presentation, but What I love about this one is we took this money and we used it specifically for the Youth of the Year from the Boys and Girls Club. He got a scholarship. We used it for 20 of our Holly Hill City young kids to come over and do a two-day basketball camp put on by our basketball coaches so they could experience the college and, you know, they couldn't afford it on a normal. And then we also used it, we're using it for some housing a little bit for the Pace Center girls and the Food Brings Hope girls because, again, they couldn't go to school if they're not staying in the housing or their situation at home is not good for them attending school. So again, this happens again in another week on the 21st, so we're looking forward to this. Any questions?
Thank you.
Okay,
all right. So Alicia, who's been here since 10 o'clock this morning, you're up.
I'm very patient. All right. I think this happened last year while I was between everyone and leaving, so I'm going to try to get through this. Luckily, I only have 3 slides, so good afternoon, everyone. I think I've seen most of you, but I'm Alicia Alexander. I'm the Dean of Institutional Effectiveness and Compliance, and I'm also the institution's accreditation liaison. So I'm here to give you a quick update on where we are and where we're going, and just if you pray or meditate or whatever, please do that. For me, for the next 3 years, you'll see why in a second. Okay, so I think I have it. All right, so here we are. First, I want to thank you all, especially the board members that participated in the interviews for the SAC-COC on-site visit last September. It went well, as it could. We were able to get through that process successfully with no recommendations. I did a little bit of research and found that only about 2% of colleges are actually able to achieve that. So we're special. So because we had no recommendations, we are now just waiting on our letter, our official letter of reaffirmation, which we're scheduled to receive this June. And so the good news is, again, we're just sitting here waiting to get the letter. There's no additional follow-up. So that's great. One of the other things that came from that was not only that we had no findings or recommendations, but also that our QEP, our Quality Enhancement Plan, also known as COMPASS, was noted as an exemplary plan. And just, a week or two ago, Dr. Lovaso approved us to have it presented at the SAC-COC annual meeting for the next 3 years as basically being showcased. So all of the institutions that are part of SAC-COC who are looking to create their QEP plan can look at us for a reference or as a stellar example. So that's a great accomplishment as well. all right, so what's next for us? So in Florida statute, starting in 2022, Florida statute says that Florida colleges, after they're either reaffirmed or have completed their 5th year review, they need to begin seeking initial accreditation with another accreditor approved by the State Board of Education. And so that agency is the Higher Learning Commission, also known as HLC. The process to do that has a lot of levels, a lot of approvals, a lot of steps. Here is a nice and neat timeline. And those numbers are for real. Starting this July, so as we receive the letter, we begin the process. And if everything goes well, it would conclude in January 2028, getting a letter from HLC saying that we're not a part of their organization. I will say that during this, we also have to still comply with SAC-COC and any requirements or reporting obligations that we have. We also do have to report quarterly to the DOE about our progress with seeking accreditation. There's a lot going on under this timeline.
What on the on-site visit, this first one from HLC, is that a full, like, what do they do on the on-site visit?
Oh, no. I'm sorry, what's the question?
So for the HLC on-site visit when we're trying to move to them, what do they do for that? Is it a full, almost like they're...
They call it an expedited process, but it's still...
Yeah, that's the, this is the accelerated. This is the accelerated timeline.
We are higher ed.
Yeah.
Well, it is expedited, okay. So it may be a little less something, maybe a little shorter timing of it, but yeah.
Okay. But originally with SACSA, it's every 10 years, right?
Yes.
Now this one we're going to switch to is like 3 years, 4 years?
Actually, I have it on the next slide. They have the 10-year requirement as well. But that 10-year requirement happens after you get reaccredited. So we have to go through the process, get approved, then 10 years, we do the big thing.
Get approved by HCF.
Yeah. Yes.
Even though SACS already is going to say we've done what we're supposed to do.
Yeah, we got to get approved from them, so we got to go through a process, like a reaffirmation in a way, but it's new. Once we get that, then we get a 10-year. So unfortunately, we just went through it, and we have to go through another little process. And I said, well,
we're an easy street. We have the right people doing the right thing, so we don't have to worry. It's just that they're going to have to do some more work.
Well, I mean, that's a great point. So we were able to do a crosswalk comparing HLC criteria with SAC-COC. Mm-hmm. And you'll see like the first three bullets there, they're kind of like the same, right? They both have to follow U.S. Department of Education criteria to even be an accreditor. They both are regional accreditors, so they have specific areas of the United States they're serving. Their principles or their standards or criteria, they have different names for them, but they have them. They overlap. The areas where they differ are, I would say, not good, but easy to identify and for us to kind of hone in on, so we know where we need to spend our energy. And everything else is kind of like a repackaging. If you look at the fourth bullet there, they do, like I mentioned, they both have a 10-year reaffirmation process, and that's pretty much the same for all the accreditors. The difference is how they do it in the in-between. So SACS does a fifth-year review, but HLC has something a little bit different where you get to choose between, well, they do it at the fourth year, but at that fourth year, depending upon how well your accreditation went, you can either do this a full comprehensive review on the fourth year, or you can do what they call an insurance review, and then do the full site visit and everything in the 5 through 9 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just slight variances is just getting to know them. It's like getting a new friend, right? What do you like? What I find interesting is that SAC-COC has specific standards about intercollegiate athletics and campus safety and online programs. HLC does not. They are now focusing on civic engagement, which is brand new. They also have specific criteria about multicultural learning opportunities, which I'm hoping to get more information on at their conference this weekend, which is in Chicago. And then also, it looks like they have a standard where they want to see how our resources support our programs, which is slightly different from what SAC-COC. They look at it from like the institutional level, and to me that looks like they're wanting to see things like by individual program. So I know we can do it. Marty's gone. but that is something brand new for us. And then other than that, it's pretty much the same game we're already in. So that's all I have to share. Any questions?
Thank you. Okay. Very good. So yeah, I think since we did so well the first time, hopefully we can just crosswalk as Alicia did and not have to reinvent the wheel. Thank you all. Try to get here before the.
Yeah. about it.
It was just on the temple.
There's a couple of umbrellas here. I got some in the back room. Yeah. Okay.
So, two reviews, the president's evaluation and the trustee's evaluation. Obviously, I think we all filled it in. Lynn has now just handed us the compilation of it. I think it's starting with the president's one. No surprise, Tom, that the board is very pleased with what you and your team do. We know it's your team, which you always give credit to, but we also know that it takes a great leader to have a great team, so we appreciate all you do. You know, if you look through these, it's amazingly good. Mm-hmm. There aren't many that weren't a five. You know, I always like to say that sometimes you learn more from the one or two that weren't than the one or two that were, but I'm sure you'll look at this and factor in areas that, you know, you might want the college to focus on next year. So on behalf of the board, a great thanks for all you do. I know we all sleep well at night knowing that you're not sitting still. You know how to make decisions, and you know how to keep moving forward. That means a lot to us. So I don't know if you guys want to echo and say your own comments, but I'll give you the opportunity to do so before we move to ours.
I think it just had to have a couple of blips inside there. That's to right. Get your focus. See stuff. But no, there's nothing else that can be said, Tom. You are an excellent president, and I'm making sure that there's nobody out there trying to recruit you. You're off the recruiting table. So. But, and it's wonderful to sit on a board where we have a president and staff that just do the functions. And, you know, like we were just discussing about the SAC stuff, you know, that they want one of the stuff that we put together, our QEP, you know, so they can share it with other institutions. And we had no findings. You know, it's like your guys are on automatic. Just keep stepping on the gas. You don't have to brake. Just keep going. And we really, really appreciate what you do with your staff for this college. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, I struggle with these. I did some studying, and you know, annual reviews are sort of going by the wayside, their effectiveness, their usefulness, because when you're scoring basically at a, you know, margin of error of, you know, 0.01, it's less instructive. And I just echo what everybody said. It's really, you know, when you understand your role as a board, as a trustee at a board level from a governance perspective and leaving management decisions to management, to have the confidence in management that you don't have, I mean, your governance responsibilities become a lot less when the execution by the officers are superb, and you've built it. You've built the team. You've done a great job of directing those things, and frankly, you make our job pretty easy. You know, which again, I'll fill it out if I have to, but you know, it's like
I think it's a stat for your
exactly. You know, like, yeah, not surprisingly, you know, they're about 25 years behind, but anyway, excellent job, and you know, keep up the good work, make our job easy. We don't, you know. I don't envy other boards that do the shouting and finger pointing and, you know, walking out and whatever, because there are boards like that. Right. And,
you mean county council?
You know,
yeah. No, thank you.
And really, you know, when you think about a volunteer service as a trustee, to have this kind of camaraderie, and we're going to get to this evaluation, you know, for our sake. But you make our job easy. You make it easy for us to be thoughtful about progress and all our stuff that we've just gone through today. Forward focused, thinking about the future, And we're building something that is way beyond what we will serve as trustees. So the next, our successors, are really inheriting something, and it's due to your great leadership.
This is, I'm not surprised what I've seen so far. This is like, this is the first day of the Masters, so you're leading the board.
Are they quiet right now?
Yeah, they teed off this morning. Yeah. So my turn?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the indulgence of the rest of you. I got to go do a campaign forum and had to take a shower on the way back just because of the, I'm kidding. you know, I've said that one of the questions that we were going to get asked, or potentially we're going to get asked today at that meeting was, of all the things that you've done in the civically community, what do you consider as your greatest accomplishment? And I said, well, and so I thought about that. That one took a while. And because I don't generally think in terms of accomplishment, you know, I think in terms of there's a lot of work to do, and you don't have time to really consider the accomplishment because you got to just keep, there's more work to be done, no matter what the accomplishment. But my answer that I came up with and was prepared to deliver, had the question come up, would have been serving on the Daytona State Board of Trustees. And so, you know, Bob and I walked into this at the same time, and I kind of, I think we all did, right? Yeah. I was a little, didn't know for sure what to expect. Probably had maybe a little bit of a jaundiced eye, you know, and sure as heck felt the pressure of following in Farouk's footsteps. That was like, are you kidding me? But to further get to the accomplishment piece, when you think about all the things that, you know, earlier in the presentation, where we stand in terms of colleges, online degrees, all of the recognition that the organization gets, that's great. But what I saw, and I've said this many times over, the level of leadership, the teamwork. So it's really not what I've accomplished, bottom line. It's really what being on a team that had a goal, that had a vision, had a plan, and worked every part of it. That would be one of my greatest civic accomplishments, is being on this team, and then obviously watching you lead. I think we all, maybe Lynn, doesn't like the you know, the part of their job. She hates having to get a hold of me because I'm miserable in my reply. But I think this is one of those, it doesn't feel like work. I approach this with enthusiasm and with knowing that not only I have something to offer, but I'm going to get something back, and that's being around this table with the rest of this group. And it's really, truly, and I've had a lot of civic and community experiences. This one's the best. So, and that doesn't happen without the leadership.
Thank you.
Yeah. You make our job easy. Definitely. You create a passion within us too that becomes contagious for this college. I got to complete this evaluation on an island last Saturday.
No, don't start bragging.
Well, it was BPC, before Pina Colada, okay? And so thankfully Lynn got it to me by email, and was able to make its way through over the ocean and all that. And I'm telling Barbara exactly, okay, I need some time. I got to do Tom's evaluation, and nothing can hurt my eyes. She was like, well, that's easy. But I did the studious thing. I compared the results and all those kinds of things to it. And when you take a look at it across the board, and you know, sometimes there's some numbers that are a little bit off, but if you look at most of the trends or the focus on improvement, it's always there, no matter what it is. And there's no excuse, you know, no excuse is offered. It's just more a matter of, okay, this is where we are, this is what we need to go do. And that's where you go with this whole thing. And Tom, thank you for your leadership. We appreciate you. I hope and I believe you do know that. You say it multiple times throughout the year. It is, Randy, you described it extremely well. I think each and every one of us were proud to be on this board.
If you'd have been where I was just about an hour and a half ago,
yeah,
it'd be easy to tell you what he was. I'm not kidding. If we could get his level of leadership in the county government,
yeah,
the world would be a different place.
Yeah.
Don't even think
comment.
About it.
Well, I mean, everyone has said a lot of what I think. Effectiveness of this aside, you don't need this. You know, you're already on the path. You're respectful of all of us. You take out the noise. There's no drama. Your leadership style is so easy. If there's a problem, we solve it as a team. And we're communicated with just enough, not too much, not too little. And you can see it reflected in everyone that spoke with us today. They know their stuff. They're expected to know their stuff from you, and they do. So it's a joy to be here. We do get to focus on being board members, and that's a gift. Yeah. It's not every organization has that. And so kudos to you.
Well, thank you. No, I can only do these things because I have a supportive board that you know. Endorses the ideas and let us run regardless of scores, I'm just wired to always to what can we do better, and I think that's that's been reflective on where we rank in the state and the country, and the staff is let's just keep climbing and on to the next, and then when when you stop and you look at the document, and we just have a lot of the breadth of projects that we have and the variety, covering two counties, there's multiple moving parts, but the team is what keeps it moving, and your support certainly helps me stay focused on those things that I need to do. So thank you. It's been an awesome job.
Thanks for all you do.
Lee out of caucus, Lee follow or get out the way.
That was originally George Patton, I think.
Yeah.
Car owned by Lee out of caucus. Similar trait.
Yeah. So on the board evaluation, I would just ask you all to read it at your leisure. Once again, I would say this is one of the most effective boards I've ever been on, especially a community board where people of all different backgrounds and are doing it because they are passionate about something and believe something. So on that note, I would ask any of you, we are still down a few board members. If you have an idea of somebody in the community that the last thing I think you want to do is disrupt the dynamics of a highly functioning board. So, if you know somebody that you think would be a great fit with this board, I'd appreciate you letting me know.
Is it a certain geography?
I think they have to be Volusia, Flagler County.
You're the only Flagler County.
There's two, right?
Two of us.
But they changed the. There used to be a ratio, but they changed that requirement.
It's more liberal, if I remember.
Yeah, it's a little more flexible now. Yeah. So, it, You could have four from Flagler County and three from Volusia if it turned out to be that way. So they loosened it up a little bit, but you know, obviously you try to get good representation across.
Do we need anybody else?
The only thing is nice is just to make sure you have a majority, but it's good. If we don't want to disrupt the board, don't get me wrong, but if you know somebody, that would be great. I just shoot me their names.
Okay.
That would be helpful.
Okay.
I think that's also an important exercise for us to always think about succession planning.
Yeah. Who's going to be the next board member?
You know, who's what do you want to see for the next 10 years and, you know, 25 years? And so, you know, to have that kind of continuity and to put people on now that will be important in making future decisions.
Yeah. I think that's great. And then I will just, as I scan through this quickly, I'm going to, Tom, we'll talk, but there's a couple of these that, you know, the board did really well, but I think we can have a workshop as an example on, you know, we can invite somebody from the community to talk about business growth in the community or business needs, and whether that's Volusia One or Career Source or somebody like that. We'll tackle a few of these that we collectively said we might could do better. All right,
great.
Is there a majority or a number that we can exceed on attorneys on the board?
Oh,
come on now.
I thought it was one, but
direct reports to the bankers.
I could use the
keeper,
but I'm not real anymore.
What
I'm doing now. I'm fine with it.
Rodney, was that out of order?
Randy, do we?
Yes.
We're going to stay for a second, yeah. So. Okay. Tom's going to wander off for a second, but I
thank you. Thank
you. You got to hear this. So everybody's gathering up. You got to hear this. So this thing went from candidate, you know, they asked questions, then a couple of questions from the audience. So attorney Jim Rose asks the chairman about his feeling. Well, yes, at the board, all of us, but he really was not asking the chairman because Don Burness, the mayor of Port Orange, he doesn't work with the chairman, with the county manager, and I'm a citizen, right? So what's your evaluation of the county manager? So he proceeds to, blame him for the rain today. That's kind of the way it went. And I said, so then it was my turn. I said, well, I don't work with him every day. I work with him as a private citizen when I need to talk to him. He's always responsive. He answers the question. He provides the information. He calls me back when he says he'll call me back. You know, that's my experience. So I can't speak to, you know, what it's like to work with him based on county policy. But I'm confused because it's been only a few months ago that you voted for a raise.
For him.
Yeah.
And if he's that bad.
So which is it? And I said, the public record, I watched the meeting. And you voted for a raise. And matter of fact, not only did he not just vote for a raise, he made positive comments. So I'm like, okay, this is exactly what's
dysfunctional.
Yeah. I had to take a minute. I'm wired up over you coming back from this. Like, you guys.
I told you last week.
What?
I told you what I thought of them last week.
Well, yeah. I'm like, do you remember?
No.
Okay, so just real quickly while we're all together, I also wanted to talk about Tom's contract renewal, which we need to start working on. Two separate issues, really, actually, that I want to talk about. So the first one was Tom has a deferred compensation plan in his contract, which had a cap in the language that it can never be greater than 2 times his current annual earnings. So once he's accumulated that much, no more contributions can be made towards it. So
like an annual cap, like that much can be made a year, or like once it hits that
total
time, just stop.
Yeah, in total. So it's a bad provision. So Tom,
can I ask a question? Is that statutory or is
it's us? I mean, it's a board 13 years ago. So the other thing is, it gets better, actually, or worse, depending on your perspective. So the original thought was, you know, Tom had asked me if the board might consider raising it to at least 3 times or take the cap out. But anyways, when you started investigating the deferred comp plan, it really was structured poorly. So I asked Rodney to talk to the external counsels. So he's, every year, he's been paying taxes as the contributions were made, but the balance was not invested. He had no control over it. In essence, so he's been paying taxes for, 12 years now? And then he'll get this distribution, and it was subject to forfeiture. So if he ever left before the end of a contract, so...
It's a taxable distribution too, isn't it?
No, that's the good news. It was structured in a way that taxes have already been paid. So here's what I would propose on that if the board's okay.
So you're saying, I want to make sure I heard what you said. So if he takes this distribution, if this is what happens, he's not incurring a tax liability.
That's correct. The taxes have already been paid.
Okay.
In the year of each contribution, even though in theory he did not get the contribution, nor was it put in an isolated account that should be invested on his behalf. It's brutal. And it had a risk of forfeiture. And I was talking to the two external council members. Imagine if it ever happened where the president had been let go. Even he would have claimed, wait a minute, I've already paid taxes on it. So anyways, that's neither here nor there. The question was, do we violate any tax code or Florida statute related to college president's pay if we just pay out the balance? And Rodney was on the call with me. The answer was no. They are comfortable that we can make that payment, and it doesn't violate. I was pretty sure about the tax code, but I wanted to make sure about the Florida statutes. That has in there now, just for your knowledge, he's close to $500,000 that is accumulated after taxes. In this plan. So I would propose that we pay that out as of the balance on 12/31/23. Pay it out as soon as we can, but pick that date as the balance. Then I would propose we come up with a new deferred compensation plan that covers any contributions from January 1st, 2024 through the end of his contract period and use a 401A where it would be non-taxable, and then in theory, not a 401, a 457F, there would be risk of forfeiture. So if he leaves before the end of his contract period, which is June 30th of 2026, he would forfeit it. There would be no taxes paid in the year, so a normal deferred compensation plan, but when he on June 30th, 2026, if he is still here, he would get paid out the full balance and it would be taxed. And that's
it. So why is he getting paid out any of this? Wouldn't it just stay in the plan?
Well, the problem is, it's not a plan. I mean, to be candid,
It's not invested.
It's not invested. So he's earned, so if we give it to him, he can start putting it to work. Oh, it's been sitting there for
unbelievable.
Oh my
God.
How do we?
I wish you brought this up earlier.
Yeah, I mean, how do we, just for our consciences, at least for mine, and I'm looking at Bob's face, so I know he's doing the same thing. How do we? Other than we didn't create the agreement.
Yeah, and you know, trust me, I've had a lot of conversations with Tom about this. You know, he's. He understood the plan as it was passed. I don't think anybody thought through the notion, this is my personal opinion, thought through the notion of, heaven forbid it really happened that they were, you know, not here, and they forfeited such a big amount, and they had already paid taxes on it. I'm convinced that would have been litigated.
Oh, man.
Forever.
Yeah, you're going to get ruined.
Yeah, but how do you do this and not have the ability to earn some sort of value on? I don't. I mean, that's my concern. You're going to tell me. You're going to say that's not. You don't think there's any chance of litigation over that?
Well, look. If he's squared away, and I think if you make a distribution of money that he's already paid taxes on, if he was getting taxed, that's why I asked. On the exit, he got it on the entrance, and
again,
and if he got it again on the exit, that would be a problem, a much bigger problem. But the fact that he's getting that distribution, he can do whatever he wants to. He can put it in the market. He can, you know, put it in real estate. He can do whatever he wants. I think having that free cash flow all of a sudden, and not having it subject to forfeiture, not having to pay, continue to pay taxes on it, and restructuring it, I think is a huge benefit for him.
Yeah, I think he's very happy. And again, he knew what the plan was from the beginning. In hindsight, I don't think we would have structured the plan that way. I know we wouldn't have, but that was the plan.
Well, I guess now, devil's advocate for a minute, okay? I hate the plan, so I'm just throwing this out there, playing devil's advocate. It's not necessarily the way I believe. I'm just asking a question. If by giving the money back to 12/31/23, whatever that balance was at that point, we have effectively cut the ball and chain, if you will, that keeps him here.
But we've immediately created a new one. You're right. We've eliminated the ball and chain. But to be candid, that was an unfair ball and chain.
No, I'm not disagreeing with that.
But the new plan will be a traditional plan.
And I think that will be, if you look at the way that that can grow appropriately as it's invested and it's tax deferred. At that point, it wouldn't be tax-free, it'd be tax-deferred.
Right, and actually it would not, so it would not be in a, I don't believe it would be invested still, because it's not taxed. So, because it's, now it is a true deferred compensation.
So he'll pay taxes when he takes the money.
I got you.
It's basically a golden handcuff.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you're here on this date.
But it's gonna be worth what, how much is it gonna be worth? What's the
amount of the current cut? The current contribution is, 2 months of pay for every year. So it's roughly 17% of his base pay each year goes into this deferred.
Yeah, so we're only talking about between so January 1 of 2024.
Through June 30th, 2026, so 2.5 years.
So all about 30,000.
I get it.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to build again, and I think the, you know, it's always that issue when you give stock grants and options, and all of a sudden you pay it out and somebody's sitting on this. But it's also, guess what? You're getting new ones and you're stacking. You have an opportunity to kind of build it. And so for most people, they're like, yeah. I mean, actually, it encourages you to stay because you could, at his rate of pay too, which is on the higher end, it's like, you know, it's an opportunity to build a nice second.
Well, yeah. I mean, in 2.5 years, it'll be roughly, 40% of his base pay. So it would be another big payout.
Right.
I think, look, the right answer is to pay it out because it was unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Even though everybody understood it, it still was unfair. It wasn't a very good plan at minimum, right? So the right thing to do is to correct the mistake.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just making sure, though.
We all got no eyes wide open.
Right
now, it's almost like I don't even know that we could vote on the first part of this because it's like we can't continue to, now that we know about it.
No, I would never be comfortable with this.
Yeah, it's over.
Yeah. I didn't know it at all.
I mean, at a bare minimum, we had to get rid of that.
Yeah
for sure. Years.
Yeah, Randy, from the standpoint of his retirement funding, okay, is there another plan beyond this?
So he has a what should have been and now will be a true deferred compensation plan, or a golden handcuff, for lack of a better word. He also participates in a retirement plan. That's the 401k.
Right.
And we contribute, we the board, the college contributes up to the IRS statutory limit in that plan every year.
And that's not the FRS. That's separate.
It's a separate plan.
But
he's in that plan as
that
opposed
that as
to.
Well.
And that's about 60 something a year, right?
It's US
66,000 this
well.
Year, or 69,000 this
pension.
Year.
Okay, so they'll have that.
So
and then
do you need a formal motion, or we're just?
Well, we'll have to go to the board meeting. I just wanted to go over the notion here because obviously at the board meeting, you know, I won't be saying that whoever.
We have a new plan.
We'd like to approve.
Hold on.
We're all in agreement with that.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the plan B? What's next?
Okay, so next then is his contract renewal.
Yeah.
and it's not really a renewal, this contract goes through June 30th, 2026. Two things we could do. We could see if he wants to add a year or two to that contract. Now that would make the new deferred compensation plan, back to your original point, have a longer hold period. Regardless of that, we have to come up with what changes we want to make to his base pay and allowances. So I had Rodney grab some information from other Florida state colleges, just as kind of a comparison sake. So Tom right now is at 336.7, and he pulled 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of the Florida state colleges that are somewhat similar to us in terms of size. We have 10,200 students. The average of those others is like 9,800. So kind of an apples to apple. And the average salary is 332. So he's just above average, but very close to the average on base salary alone. On housing allowance, he does not get one. Some of the other, three of the other ones do get a housing allowance. The others do not. On auto allowance, he's above average. The average is roughly 16.5, and Tom gets 21. On the retirement plan, everybody does a different one. Like some do a 403A, a 457B, a 401A. But if you just look at dollar amounts, he's well above average, I believe, on that. So the average would be 24, 34, 43. 1,000 and Tom's at 66,000, so we contribute an extra 23,000 to his retirement. Rodney, you—I don't know if this is as easy to find, but for you only listed that 1, 2, 3 of them got deferred, had a deferred compensation plan. Now, I don't know if they're the only three that reported it, or truly the only three.
So, just an example. So this was a spreadsheet from last year. We're about to do this contract. I added one more person because I happen to be speaking to Indian River State College's chief general counsel, and she was nice enough to forward me his contract. So those are based on what their contract says. That's how I have that information.
Okay.
All those other salaries that you see are from last year, May 2023, whereas what you reported for Tom and the last president for Indian River State College is for this the contract starting July 1st of 2023 onwards. So
you didn't update the salary?
No, I did not have time to find out. You know, I can look up on the record, but it was still the same salary. So the assumption is maybe they did not update the, you know, publicly.
So we might want to add 3% to that. Anyway, we do, Tom's advantage, I believe, is that deferred compensation plan. So at the time this was put together last year, one community college president, Tallahassee, had a 20% deferred comp plan. Tom's is roughly 16.5%, and Seminole had one, but they did not list the amount. Nobody else showed, at least on this, that they had a deferred comp plan.
So,
do you have a recommendation in thinking about longer amounts?
I do. But I'm open to debate. I mean, to me, it's always that fine line of, I think we should reward Tom appropriately.
Yeah.
He does a great job. He's got longevity.
Well, average is not the position that I want him to be in.
No, but if you add in the 66,000 versus the 43,000 for retirement, there's 23. If you add in the 16.5 deferred comp, that's roughly 55. Only two other have it. So again, I thought these were updated. If we add 3%, here's my gut. Tom is right now all in at maybe 513, and the average of everybody else is gonna be under 500.
So this is total compensation, all things considered, car allowance, retirement, the whole
shebang. Okay. Now, you know, in the court of public opinion, I don't know how many people are going to go out and find all these details. They might just compare base pay. You know, I don't know if they're going to dig into cell phone allowances and contributions to that account.
What I would say to all of them is, When you can reach his status of what he's doing, then you can talk to us.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody out there that can compare to Tom.
So I can, I think we should answer Kelly's question. Do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, I do. So, I mean, it just as a starting point to throw out. First off, we give him the past 2 years, we've given him a one-time payment. Can't call it a bonus because that's against statute, but we've called it a one-time payment. And most of the other college, many of the other college presidents have something like that. Last year we did 35,000. You know, I think at a minimum we take that up to 50,000.
Yeah, we had that discussion last year a lot, and I was on the losing end of the recommendation. I thought we should do it then, so yeah.
And if I compare to all the other ones, you know, only one would be higher than that right now. And many, some don't get one, most are in the 17, 30, 28, 35. So back to our point, we would be in the top two for that category, if you will. And that would add 15,000 to his total number. For the base pay, I did ask Tom, just so I think it's something we would want to know, what he's probably going to recommend for salary pools for the college. Because I know he's always sensitive to kind of what he gets versus what the masses get. So he's currently planning on having, like he did last year, a three-tiered program for the
based on their hourly
their pay. So the lowest paid employees would get 5%, the middle tier would get 4%, and the top paid would get
3%. So you're saying 3%.
So,
but you know, if it were me, I'd even go a little bit higher for Tom, and he might not like it, but
so in the middle.
Yeah, I would do 4%.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good
for Tom and salary.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that's gonna take a little. Probably 350.
He'd be at right around 350 plus the $50,000 one-time payment.
Yeah.
Plus
the deferred stuff. Plus
the new deferred compensation.
But you're right, for optics, most people are going to look at salary.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's going to be.
That's fair. That's still unfair.
You keep that.
Above average.
Yep. Exactly.
Yep.
He's way above average.
Yep.
We can defend that.
That's the backup.
That's right. Yep. In full transparency, Tom had brought up his auto allowance. I'm a little nervous on that one because it's at $21,000, and I think just the average person would say that's a high auto allowance. So that's why I'd rather just put it in the one-time payment.
I agree.
It's not tied to an item that somebody else did.
It's like 17, so 12 and 7 is 84. Yeah, about 1750.
Yeah, a month.
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't go anywhere near. I think you get. It starts to get real kind of messy when you get into housing allowances and auto, and you're covering this and that, and it's like, you know, that gets a little.
Well, if he's going to think it's three and you're going to do four, and we did all these other things,
right.
I mean, it may not be a line item, but it still gets to the bottom.
That's correct. Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Use it for whatever you want to.
Yeah.
I personally, I would ask. You've probably had conversations, but I would feel much better if there was a two-year extension to the agreement, at minimum.
I'm with you.
So that would take it through the end of 2028?
Yeah. At minimum.
This is a question I wish I'd asked those attorneys the other day, but we have some attorneys in the room.
2028 or 2026?
2028 if you add it to.
Because it's right now the contract goes through 26.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
The other thing then might be is the amount, obviously it's not because every college president has a different amount. If he agreed to the two-year extension, we could also consider a larger amount going towards deferred maybe in the last year or two. That's just a way to sweeten the pot.
I mean, and that welds him to the seat.
That's what we're looking for.
100%.
Slavery.
What the heck?
What's the record?
I'm an open book. Okay, let's be honest.
We're a support reporter.
Well, I mean, we don't have that component in the room, so I can speak freely.
When's the next board meeting?
May
5th. 10 minutes ago.
It is in May, though. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll talk again to Tom, what I'm hearing, right?
Yep.
There's a desire to extend the contract.
Yep.
If he's for that, problem solved. If he's reluctant to it, sounds like everybody would be okay if we tried to sweeten it a little bit to get them to agree, or did it a 1 year versus a 2 year.
Yeah.
But today we'll still do the one-time payment and the increase.
Today we're going to bring up a motion without the documents because the attorneys are going to have to paper this. But we're going to approve in concept if everybody's all right in this.
Yeah.
To pay them out and start a new deferred comp.
Yeah.